Connect the Dots with Allison Rose Levy, Saturdays at noon, Eastern, on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and we're with you every Saturday at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm very excited to be with you today. I'm a Huffington Post blogger and health and green journalist for over 20 years, specializing in covering the integrative health movement, the environmental movement, food, and everything that connects. On Connect the Dots, we're connecting the bigger picture between our personal health and our total health environment. And we have a terrific guest on today's show who we'll be speaking with in just a minute. And I'll tell you more about him then. He's really terrific. In fact, I've had him on before on my previous radio show, and he has a wonderful book out that is also a really good resource. But first, I begin every show with social action, because in the times we're now living in, we have to put together both our personal health and lifestyle choices and our what's going on in our public life, because there are many things that we can choose to do to better our health personally, and there are also a lot of factors influencing our health and everyone's health that are really coming to us from the environment. And so on this show we connect that a lot. That's what Connecting the Dots is all about. And therefore, we also connect you to various forms of social action on a range of health, food, and environmental issues. So I've reported repeatedly on fracking, a process of gas drilling that's relatively new that uses over 500 toxic chemicals and mixes them with water and, has a way of kind of spilling, affecting water supplies, air, food, and others. Today's action is really especially for New Yorkers, residents of New York State. And instead of being on my website, healthjournalistblog.com, as it usually is, I'm just going to send you today directly to a citizens organization that really does a really terrific job of keeping track of these issues and everything that's going on. And it's called Catskill Citizens for Safe Energy. And right now we are less than a month in, as the show is being reported, on the decision of the governor of New York State, Governor Cuomo, to allow fracking in certain regions of New York. And there have been new environmental conservation regulations recently published. And so we're in a whole new world in New York State, and yet many people aren't aware of it, actually. And this could have effects all over the state, affecting both our water supply, the quality of our air, and our food. So wherever you live, I warmly invite you to kind of stay current on this issue. Three things that you can do. First, you can go today to CatskillCitizens.org. That's CatskillCitizens.org, and you can sign up to receive their emails. And I have belonged to them for a while, as well as a bunch of other groups, and they don't really bombard you, so don't worry about that. They do let you know about timely actions, and they have several actions on their site that you can partake of today and take action on, as well as ways to keep informed about recent press, things that happen, events, and developments in this very important issue. They have a latest news section, which highlights a number of interesting stories today. I also blog on this on the Huffington Post, and you can read my blogs by signing up to follow me and get an email when I blog, and I welcome your comments on the Huffington Post, Allison Rose Levy, and you can also read many of them on my blog, healthjournalistblog.com, and you're welcome to sign up there, too, to receive a weekly e-sign I send out, which is called The Health Outlook, and it contains my blogs as well as radio programs like this one. That's it for the action of the day, but it's really an important thing for those who are health conscious and environmentally conscious to stay aware of. And one particular action on the Citizens website that I wanted to highlight for you, because we're going to talk about it a little bit with our guests too, is there's a new proposed act in Congress called the Endocrine Disrupting Chemicals Exposure Elimination Act of 2011. And this has recently been introduced in order to empower the government to really look at a range of chemicals, some of them acting in subtle ways that are coming into exposure to people via products in agriculture, products in beauty and healthcare products, even in food, and that have a range of subtle effects that are just beginning to be studied. So these need to be studied more, and they need to be controlled better, especially until they're better understood. And we're going to ask today's guests a little bit about that as well. So please go there as well and familiarize yourself with that. And if you feel so inclined, please take action to support the passage of that act. And now we'll segue into the interview portion of the show. And today I'm really delighted to have with us Walter Krinian. He is someone that I've had on the show before. And so he's, you know, I'm having him on a second time because he just has so much and is an expert in really an area that is too little known that we really need to know a lot more about. And that is the connection between health and environment. He is a specialist in helping people recover from chronic disease caused by environmental toxic burden. Dr. Krinian is actually a naturopathic physician. He's been in practice for two decades. He is the author of a book called Clean, Green, and Lean, which is published by Wiley, and he also blogs on the Huffington Post. So now we're hearing the new alarm bell go off a little tardily, so let's just let that ring and before we bring on Dr. Krinian. You know, I think there's really a lot to this whole discussion. It should be part of... Okay, there we go. What we're talking about on today's show, the connection between environment and health and how to treat and prevent environmental health illness is what we'll be talking about with Dr. Walter Krinian, naturopathic physician on the show today with us, and he's the author of Clean, Green, and Lean. And actually, in my mind, this should be at the foundation of almost all health care. And it isn't, so we'll also talk about that. So welcome to our show, Dr. Krinian. Lovely to have you back again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back. It's delightful.
You know, you were really, I just want to take a step back and just kind of give a context. I think that you were really far ahead of the curve to begin practicing in this direction, which is a real shortfall area, both in terms of contemporary medical practice and in public understanding. So I'd like to ask you why it's so important, how you came to see it when other people weren't quite getting there yet, and you know, how you think we're doing in terms of facing up to this and treating.
Well, you know, great questions there. As a naturopathic physician, one of the basic principles of naturopathic medicine is to treat the cause. We like to say that people don't have headaches because they are deficient in aspirin. So when I was working with patients, I was always, you know, thinking about what is causing their problem. And I soon came to realize that it wasn't always just from a deficiency of nutrients. People had burdens in them that were preventing them from getting better. So that's really what got me going, is trying to get my patients better without having to give them supplements all the time. So I started really looking at the whole premise of body toxicity, from a naturopathic point of view, is originally liver toxicity. But then that got me into the whole field of body burden, and this is what I've been doing for the last 30 years, surprisingly enough. It's it's been that long that I've been in this realm, and I really believe it is the area that all health providers are going to have to start looking very seriously at.
You know, I completely agree with you, and in looking at your bio, you're right. I lost a decade when I said you'd been doing this for 20. You've been doing this for 30. That is very, very far ahead of the curve. But yet, you know, for example, I think people have heard of detox. Some people have tried different forms of detox. This is, you know, not an unheard of thing among people who are concerned about health. Yet on the conventional medical side, you have people poo-pooing detoxification of any kind. And what you mentioned there, the concept of toxic body burden, is not, although it's been known, as you say, in naturopathic circles, it's certainly well understood in European medicine. It's kind of regarded almost as non-existent. Somehow it's in Western and U.S. medicine, even though it's considered to be the best medicine by some in the world. You know, we have all this stuff coming at us, and it's just assumed it's kind of not entering us, going through us, or any combination of things that comes through we could somehow handle, even though we don't know what it is exactly. This seems like a big gap there. Do you think that, why do we have that gap?
Yeah, you know, it is a huge gap when, you know, there's the whole thing of inertia. You know, when you get rolling on a certain method, you want to keep that method, and you become invested in that method. And the method of allopathic medicine has been basically, you know, treat the alarm, treat the cause. I mean, sorry, treat the symptom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's done either with medications or surgery or something like that. I mean, that's how standard medicine has been operating forever. The old analogy I used to give was, if you think of the old style alarm clocks with the big bells on the outside and the little hammer that hits them, it's the alarm clock that they still use in all the cartoons. The allopathic model for turning off the alarm in the morning is to cut off the bells, but the little hammer is still trying to ring them. You can't just deal with the symptoms, but that's the whole system. And so they're still following the same system. And yet, you can't, you know, any gardener knows that if you just pull the weeds off the leaves off the dandelion weed, it's going to grow back. You have to get to the root. You have to get to the cause of the problem. And we are dealing with a whole, just a tsunami of illnesses that are related to toxic burden. And it just can't be ignored anymore. You know, I've been teaching in this area for a long time. I do a training for physicians in environmental medicine. And, you know, now I just got people knocking down the door saying, I need this, because what I've been doing for patients, either as a naturopath or a medical doctor, is no longer working.
Yeah, I can certainly believe that. I personally, I guess, have been aware of this area as a reporter and also as a health coach, and, you know, through the experience of, because one of the things that I do as a journalist is that I'm able to circulate. So I don't just go to, you know, one health conference or, you know, follow one kind of healthcare practice, like whatever that might be, Ayurveda or functional medicine or a raw food diet or whatever that form of practice might be. As a journalist, I have to be a generalist and kind of cover the terrain. So that's why I think I was educated to this early on, and yet there it is as a shortfall. So maybe can you tell our listeners what you're talking about? What is toxic burden? You know, what is that?
Well, you know, it's a buildup. Let me not use the word buildup. Some things do build up, some things don't. But it's a load every day in our body of chemicals from the environment, solvents from exhaust of all the vehicles that are driving around the road, solvents from indoor building materials, carpeting, rugs, drapery, paints, glues, the exhaust, not just the solvents in the exhaust, but the combustion byproducts in the exhaust that are in the air. If someone is smoking, there's more. If there's, you know, indoor cooking with gas, there's more. The pesticides that are used prolifically, not only outside, but inside businesses, schools, movie theaters, grocery stores, apartment complexes, places where, you know, a movie theater, come on. There's all kinds of food on the floor in a movie theater. There should be crawling with bugs, but it's not because you wouldn't go back to that theater, so they spray them.
Oh, my.
In restaurants. Grocery stores, that's why there aren't any bugs there, because they spray. So we're exposed to these. Our favorite fruits and vegetables are loaded with pesticides. Now, we also have heavy metals and the old style of chlorinated pesticides or PCBs, other chlorinated products that aren't used so much anymore, but they bioaccumulate, and we pass them from mother to child. And those things are persistent. We still get them if you eat farmed Atlantic salmon, non-organic dairy. You still get these things in you every day. And they stay for a lifetime. So we've got a host of toxins that are persistent, but then we've got a host of toxins that don't stay in the body long, but we have high levels of them because we're around them every day. That's the current pesticides. If you're eating non-organic apples or celery or grapes or cherries or bell peppers, you have these things in your blood.
So let me just interject a moment here, because, I mean, this is a terrific and very clear presentation, and, you know, it's not a completely comprehensive list of everything, but it's a very comprehensive beginning overview that people can get their minds around. So, you know, on the one hand, we have this idea that nothing is affecting us, and it all, if it did affect us, it's all passing through us and moving on somewhere else. And yet, what you're describing as the reality, like, for example, I'm sure you're aware, in fact, I know you are because you've blogged on this. I have been a proponent of organic food and a consumer of organic food, and I've written on that a lot and the whole, all the way through the 20-year, you know, kind of initiative to create the organic standards, and now we have to, on the, you know, the federal policy level, maintain those standards. And this year we're having yet another revision of the Farm Bill, which is the place where the standards either rise or fall. They either are maintained and supported and built up, or they are degenerated and are taken apart and made less meaningful. At first we didn't have them at all. So for many years there was this question in everyone's mind. It hasn't been studied. How do we know that organic is healthier? We can't prove that it's healthier. And so then some people went out and they spent the money and they did the research and they proved that there is, you know, a higher level of key nutrients in organic fruits or vegetables. I think they did the tomato at first. They've done blueberries. They've done various things. And you've reported on this on Huffington. But, you know, it's like we demand proof. And yet at the same time, it's kind of not examined what the pesticides that you're talking about or the other ingredients in agriculture, the fact that those are present and they may, and we may be exposed to them, that isn't, we don't have even a science that studies that. So we have this conundrum where on the one hand, we can't say it's so until it's studied. We couldn't presume that it's healthier not to have these pesticides in the produce and dairy products and meats, et cetera, that we eat. We can't presume that without a study. And yet we don't study what the use of these chemicals, you know, the impact of that on health. We don't have even a model for studying that very well, do we? I mean, isn't that a paradox?
It is. And part of it is that the scientific model looks for a single causative agent.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they would want to just use one pesticide in a mouse model and be able to see if that pesticide caused problems, mm-hmm. rather than the whole soup of what we have in us as humans. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the problems with the current scientific model, is it's not set up for a complex system, which is exactly what we are. We're complex systems. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're really not set up for that. But recently there have been some interesting studies out looking at the effect on things like the organophosphate pesticides when fetuses are exposed, you know, in utero to them. Mm-hmm. And what they've shown is that the initial study that was just out was that there's increased rates of asthma and allergies, and there's also appears to be increased rates of ADHD. Mm-hmm. Now, not only with these pesticides, which one can easily avoid, the list of the most common, most toxic fruits and vegetables is easy to get to at the environmentalworkinggroup.com. Mm-hmm. And it leads to both the pesticides and plastics in food, which aren't only in food, but in a lot of personal care products, very high in all the fragrances. So anything with a fragrance, perfume, is high in these things. Mm-hmm. And that leads to more, you know, the ADHD. It also leads to childhood obesity. And air pollution has been shown to be associated with obesity. I mean, it's just all these problems, these health problems that we're in national crises about, so many of them are associated with these daily exposures to things that, you know, we've come to think of as maybe irritants, but we don't think of them as things we really need to avoid because they're so common to us.
And here we are with the obesity epidemic, which is rife and growing. It hasn't been stemmed yet, and I have written on it extensively with in books of doctors and everything, and there we usually, you know, blame the people for their lack of self-control, you know, and true people, you know, may not know how to eat properly. They were taught for many years to eat high quantities of refined carbohydrate products. You know, there's a great promotion of a lot of, you know, valueless food substances, if they could be called foods, you know, like, for example, sodas and other things. And some people are either unaware that these are problematic, or they've been advertised to and taught that they're fine, or they may become addicted to them, or they may lack the willpower to quit. But it's far less willpower and a lot more, you know, an effect from societal choices than what we usually have thought in the past, isn't it?
Yeah, well, let me give you an example. There are these plasticizers. They're called phthalates, but they're plasticizers. And, you know, we think about them. You get them in food that's, you know, been wrapped in plastic or heated in plastic. Mm-hmm. And if when a child is exposed to these plasticizers in, you know, while they're growing in mom, they end up being overweight. Now, mm-hmm. the plasticizers are not just from food. The plasticizers that are in highest levels in people are not from food. They're from the fragrances that mom's putting on.
Oh, my.
So anything that's got a fragrance, you know, just mom wanting to smell nice, you know, she's going to end up having higher levels of these things in her bloodstream. And this is also from things as simple as fragrances in your shampoo or your body lotion that you wear. Just by making those choices to have those things, you can end up with a child who's overweight and got attention deficit problems. I mean, come on. It's like, what in the world is the EPA doing and the FDA doing that they're allowing this stuff to still be on the market when the research shows these issues?
Well, my understanding, because I do, reporting on these policy issues, is that for the FDA, once it gets grandfathered in, and it may be grandfathered in because there was an industry revolving door and someone came out from industry, took a government position as an expert in that category and got a certain substance, a sweetener or something else, passed, and then it's there forever and it's said to be okay forever. One of the issues around the dental mercury question has been that mercury was grandfathered in very early, and the same holds true with the problems in regulating BPA. It's grandfathered in, and then somehow nothing can be done. It can't be reevaluated. So, we have this thing where science must prove that organic food is healthier, but whatever new findings there might be about any of the substances that you're mentioning, or even a toxic metal, a heavy metal like mercury, that can't be reevaluated according to the contemporary science. Once it kind of got locked in there, it becomes a very cumbersome and impossible to kind of deal with it. Now, let me ask you a follow-up question on the phthalates. Would these be considered endocrine disruptors? Because at the beginning of the show,
absolutely.
I was mentioning a move to regulate those.
Absolutely endocrine disruptors. That's been shown very clearly. Mm-hmm. There is in Puerto Rico, they're having a horrible problem with premature breast development in girls. And so what we're talking about here is 3-year-old girls having to wear brassieres.
Oh, my, that's really – I mean, we got kind of – when it began with 11-year-olds, we were like, well, the times are different. And then it went down to 8. We were like, things are changing here. And now you're saying to us it's 3 years old? Wow.
Yeah. And what they found, that they thought, oh, it's got to be the pesticides. Everybody wants to blame DDT for everything. Not that I think DDT is a good thing, but and it's not. But what they found was it was the plasticizers in their bloodstream from all the food that gets shipped there in plastic. It was the plasticizers that were associated. So, yes, these phthalates are endocrine disruptors.
And how does that function? Tell our audience a little bit more about what an endocrine disruptor is and what the problem is with it for our health.
Well, these are all chemicals that have been used, supposedly to make our lives better, better living through chemistry. But they get in us. And once they're in us, there are multiple systems that they can affect. But endocrine disruption is only looking at how it messes up our hormone regulation systems. So there are numerous, the list of chemicals is so huge. It affects one's ability to be fertile. So many women are infertile at this point, and men. They have so much more trouble than, when I started practice 30 years ago. And so it can be infertility. It can be menstrual problems. It can be thyroid issues, obesity, diabetes. These things, whatever chemicals mom's around when the babies are growing, can affect the sex of the child, the reproductive ability of that child, whether you're going to be a grandma or not, based on what you're eating, what you're putting on your body. All these things, we need to start paying so much attention to this, and especially for the girls, in their 20s, 30s, and even up to 40s, whenever they're, doing reproduction or thinking about reproduction or just having sex without protection, we need to be working with our young women with this, because it can totally, completely change the outcome of that child's life.
Wow. So, you know, it's really interesting, and I want to continue this because I think this is a very, very crucial understanding on multiple levels. We have to have a break right now, but we will come back and go further in depth in this topic with someone who really can go to that depth because he's been doing this. You've been doing this for 30 years. So please stay with us, listeners, in the conversation we're having with Dr. Walter Crinian, environmental health naturopath. Doctor, and I'm Allison Rose Levy. This is Connect the Dots, and we'll be back with you right after the break.
This is PRN. Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, this is Karen Hartglass, and I am a vegan. No, I am not an alien from planet Vega. I simply choose to eat plant-based foods. Join me on Ask a Vegan every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be talking about everything from soup to nuts. Plant-based foods are the healthiest foods to eat, as well as being the most economical, the most compassionate, and the least destructive. If you want to know more about the healthy, planet-friendly, plant-based diet, call in with your questions. Or call in and share your favorite vegan recipes. Tune in on Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on www.progressiveradionetwork.com.
I'm Elaine Tanifa, host producer of Evolving Ideas. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and global on the Internet. Join me each week on the Progressive Radio Network to explore the universe and our relationship to it.
Every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join the founders of the Godspeed Institute for Spiritual Learning, Carol and Michael Hallenbeck, for Godspeed, an enlightening and informative journey into the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Through conversations with experts worldwide, this weekly live call-in program is an on-air classroom aimed at helping listeners gain exposure to and insight into religious and spiritual practices around the world, every Sunday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, a station that doesn't rest until you're informed. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, Connect Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and we're here with you every Saturday at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network to connect the dots between personal health and the choices we make in our society and what's going on in our larger total health environment. On today's show, I am talking with Dr. Walter Crinian, an environmental health expert and actually a leader in environmental medicine in terms of both treating people and as well as training other practitioners and doctors in the nuances of, I think, one of the most vital linkages in health treatment of our time, given the times that we're living in. We're delighted to have him on the show with us. He's the author of Clean, Green, and Lean, which is highly recommended. It covers the material that we have, and also it's an easy how-to guide that will help you both make wise shopping choices to protect your health, as well as in terms of food and other items that you're exposed to. Whatever you can do on a personal choice level to kind of buffer and protect yourself and your family, I think really can be found in that book, and you can get going on that. As there's more that we we are learning about all of this. Regular listeners to the show know that I'm a proponent of first doing all you can to get your personal act together on health. If you're having problems there, seeking out, health expertise like Dr. Crinion's, which is rare enough, but through his teaching, hopefully, will become better understood and more widespread. And I'm also regard as a crucial component taking social health action to affect the policies in terms of how our food is grown, how it's regulated, how various chemicals and other substances in the environment that we're exposed to and can't avoid are regulated. All of that goes to matters of public policy, and that's why if we care about health, we have to look there too. And in fact, we're just in the middle, when we took our break, of discussing endocrine disruption with Dr. Crinion, and I also have a kind of little bit of a long-term question for him that we will go to after we have completed that. So just to catch listeners up, before the break, Dr. Crinion was telling us the wide range of chronic health illnesses with which, exposures to phthalates and other endocrine disrupting chemicals are associated through the scientific research, and these included diabetes, ADD, fertility issues, and a whole range of other obesity, a whole range of other problems. Now, these are the biggest problems that we're having nowadays. So this is a big area to understand more. How is it that we have missed this for so long, Dr. Crinion?
That's an excellent question. And that's one I don't have any good answers for. That could get into the conspiracy theories. about the chemical lobby, and the power of the chemical industry. There, if you haven't seen this documentary that Bill Moyers did a number of years ago called Trade Secrets,
right?
Yeah, and he really looked and did some good reporting on the role of Ronald Reagan in his first term there, basically giving the chemical industry everything they asked for.
Mm-hmm.
And the dire results that have happened as a result of those that Republican action to be very, very pro-business. And a lot of what we're dealing with is a result of that legacy.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You're right, because it's coming out on other fronts where, some of the economic beliefs or myths or what was believed to be true, which has resulted in a very dire economic situation. That his role in that and the onset of that at that time is now really being reexamined. And so it's a very interesting. I didn't recall that from Trade Secrets, but now that you mention it, I do, because it's several number of years ago that I last saw it. But that's kind of amazing.
It hasn't been shown much.
No, and there's not a comparable.
Which is also very interesting for a Bill Moyers special to get so little airtime.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what's going on with this?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things we really are, we were in the era in which I grew up, it was like the wonders of modern chemistry, kind of. We were so excited about all of the wonderful things that it created, but the checks and balances where those are weighed against health and we consider the downsides, that isn't done so well, and in fact there's been an erosion of that. One of the things that happens for those who haven't seen Trade Secrets, and it was sort of replicated, it's been replicated a little bit by the Environmental Working Group, is that they actually did studies and they looked at what were the chemicals that people had in their bodies. And this is a costly thing. I think he went to Mount Sinai. He and a dozen or so other people did this. And the Environmental Working Group has looked at, the umbilical cord tissue of newborns, right?
Original body burden study that EWG was involved with. That was the one that Bill Moyers, he's a participant in that.
Oh, they initiated that study. Oh,
yes.
Wow.
And you can go to their website. It's still available in their, archives.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go to it and find that study, and you can actually go and click on Bill Moyers' name and see exactly what toxins he had in his body.
You know, we're referring back. I mean, I'm sure I don't remember the year that was done, but I would guess it's over a dozen years ago. So here we are,
and we
don't know because we aren't studying. And so when he studied, and when you know they did the umbilical cord study, suddenly we get a snapshot of what's going on with everyone. And actually, this is leading to my deep dish question for you, Walter, which is, one of the things that we find that's happening with this new gas drilling practice called fracking, which takes over 500 toxic chemicals and mixes them with enormous quantities of what was formerly relatively clean, let's say, public water, and then, you know, sends them down into the earth to kind of penetrate the rock and clear the way so that the natural gas can be brought up for carrying and use. And then these chemicals in the water come back up again. Some of them stay down in the earth, and some of them come up, and they're in holding tanks, and they have to be carried hither and yon and try to be dealt with. Either buried somewhere or dealt with in some kind of distant wastewater management facility. So I'm just kind of sketching the context for the concern about chemicals in water. And what has been reported in Pennsylvania, the neighboring state here to New York from where I'm broadcasting, is that, you know, people are now experiencing various forms of illness, and some have actually gone and had a blood tests and have found, for example, high levels of barium in the blood. It isn't known, you know, to either them or their doctors what the effect of having, you know, say that and this and that, several of these very toxic, neurotoxic or carcinogenic chemicals, what those will do, how quickly they will do it, how they will interact with the garden variety spread that we're getting. There isn't, when they go to their conventional doctor and this test is performed, which only happens under duress because it's not a standard test and it's very costly to perform it, you know, basically come up with the information, oh, they have a very high barium level, but then there's a shrug of the shoulders, and what? This is a huge gap. So one of the concerns about, you know, fracking, for example, is these kinds of exposures becoming more rampant. And then the thought, I think, for people who don't live in the neighborhood where that is happening is, well, it's not coming to me. I'm not right there. But, you know, even small levels, we have that then entering the whole soup at a lower level, let's say, for a nearby population in a city an hour away as opposed to, you know, more concentrated for people right in the neighborhood. But we don't have any way of studying or proving any of this.
Right. You know, and if you think that your local water supply can't be contaminated with chemicals that will kill you and contaminated by big industry, just go rent Aaron Brockovich.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this has been done before. Love Canal. You know, there is a history of this. There's Cancer Alley in Louisiana. You know, this has been done many times in our country by companies that are often utility companies that are making money. You know, when it comes to making money, we don't count. Our health doesn't count.
Do you know, I bet you see people showing up in your practice who come from these various things. Is there, you know, is there a range of, you know, like, because then people go, well, A, either it won't happen to me, or if there is, maybe there's something like, is this contributing to cancer rates? I mean, you know, and if it does, like, will people, that people wouldn't know, would they?
No, they really don't know. And that's, you know, really one of the big reasons I did the book Clean, Green, and Lean, because, you know, you want to point to the fracking chemicals, you want to point to chromium-6 and Aaron Brockovich, you want to point to the DDT, but really it's a total load. And the things that you can control are most of your control, the air in your house, the food you eat. Mm-hmm. And you can control those things and reduce those exposures. It lowers your total load. And there's stuff in the book about just how to increase the excretion of all the toxic compounds that are in your body as well. So, you know, we have to all start to be aware and make personal choices that we have control over to reduce our daily intake of the environmental toxins, because it's the total load. It's how do you know when that, you know, is the new carpet in your house going to be the straw that breaks, you know, your health? Is it going to be the last flow to it?
That can happen. I know people who've taken aspirin and had, you know, to solve dental pain and, you know, had to deal with, you know, it undermining the gastrointestinal tract, the immune system, and it was the final. So you never know what the final, you know, kind of this was the we've gone too far point. Why isn't there more why is there a disconnect, do you think, between what we do personally for our health and the health advice that, you know, we give as practitioners, and yet somehow it's considered, you know, impolite or, you know, a practitioner, the person like yourself, Mark Hyman, others who see this firsthand, who are the people who really understand what this is creating for us, and yet there's a kind of a doctor is supposed to sort of be saintly and apolitical and above all of this and isn't supposed to mention, you know, the decisions that we make as a society that are, you know, worsening our health, raising health costs, and really diminishing our functional capacity and our survival capacity, indeed. On multiple levels, and yet it's kind of considered, you know, doctors have to be a sort of safe place of respite, you know, where we get a solution, even if only, you know, a partial one, you know, and we can't go that step further to say, come on, everybody, we have to address this. What's the holdback, do you think? Because I heard you going there, and I was really excited, so that's why I'm putting that question to you.
Oh, golly. You know, I wish I had the answer. I really do. You know, it's so clear to me because I've been working with sick people for the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. And I take case history after case history, and I find that these people did not work for Boeing Aerospace. They weren't pesticide applicators. They weren't diesel car mechanics, all those things that we think of as, you know, being very, very toxic, you know,
workplace exposures. In other words,
you know,
higher level workplace exposures. Yeah.
They're just normal folks with the same kind of chemical exposures as I was having. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more I saw these people, the bigger my backyard garden got. The quicker I pulled all the carpet out of my house. You know, because I'm seeing all these people, and, you know, it's like, I'm no different from them. What's going to keep me from having the same problems as they're all developing? I've got to start paying attention to what is in my house, because the indoor air is a bigger deal for air pollution than what's outside. It's a bigger deal what's inside your house, and that's mostly from what you choose to have as furnishings in your house, as cleaning agents in your house, you know, all the scented things and all that stuff. It's in your control. The food you decide to eat is in your control. You just, unless you're in prison or in the military, it's in your control.
Or in schools.
Yeah.
So, in the school
system.
You
can make these changes and drastically reduce your daily burden.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the book Slow Death by Rubber Duck?
Yes.
So Rick Smith up there in Canada he did this great little experiment where just with his personal care products, his level of plasticizers, when he didn't use any personal care products that were scented, was like, you know, 350. After 2 days of using scented products, it was like 1,600. Just from making these personal care choices. So we can dramatically reduce our total daily toxic load by some very simple personal choices on what we eat, what we put on our bodies, what we have in our house. And it can make huge differences for one's health and the health of your offspring, your yet-to-be-born children.
You know, that's another thing I wanted to do a follow-up on, and we're kind of coming up to the last 5 minutes of the show, so we kind of have to keep it a little brief because we'll have to close out soon. But I wanted to ask you, one of the things that you were saying before we took the break was the importance of young women who are planning to become mothers, hoping to become mothers, you know, to kind of clean up their act, be aware of these issues prior, and I agree with you. This is the next generation. It's super important stuff here. Like, for example, right now, you know, we'll say, oh, well, a pregnant mother shouldn't eat this, shouldn't do that. But given that some of these things that kind of lodge in the body or that may be already there, is that going to be enough just not to do this and, you know, please don't do that once you become pregnant? Or is there stuff that people need to be doing to prepare to become pregnant and conceive and carry to term a healthy child? I know it's a long question for a few minutes, but, you know.
Yeah, and this actually would be a great topic for an entire show.
Well, we'll do a show on this then. We will have you back and we'll do a show on this.
My,
that's my commitment.
My wife, when we decided to have our little girl, we got her tested for heavy metals, for PCBs, for chlorinated pesticides, for solvents in her blood. We checked all that out. She had heavy metals. We had to do chelation for a year, clear them out. So, yes, there are some things. I've worked with a lot of parents who have children with some real serious health problems, and it was from heavy metals that were in mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one woman in my practice in Seattle that she got the lead from her mother, and she passed it to her son. So it's, you know, different generations passing lead through, mom to daughter to grandson. So you have to look at these things. I recommend you do anyway.
Yeah, we will, if you would like to, I would love to have you back and do a whole show on that because,
I really think we should.
If we're talking about preventive, you know, this is like dealing with this and preventing, you know, for the next generation, I think, you know, is one of the most important things that, you know, we could be doing. So, you know, we'll, you're welcome back and we'll schedule time and just deal with that in depth. I think that's a fantastic thing. It's an education also for the mother. Now, but, you know, one of the things too is that, you know, and I'll just mention this in passing. I mean, these tests are not a part of regular health care in general, are they? And so it becomes, you know, the thing
they're
that.
Not. You have to go to you know, a naturopathic physician to get this testing, or one of the alternative MDs that's gone through further training, you know, to be able to get these tests to do. Because otherwise, they're just
accustomed
not
to that,
standardly
and
available.
Also not everyone can afford it, you know. So there's a kind of, I mean, I think that those who can should, yet people aren't accustomed to it, and I think we need to do something so that it's more available to everyone, and it's not just, you know, kind of an elite service of some kind. You know, why is it that people, I mean, doctors do tests, there's a lot of testing that goes on, why isn't this test, these kinds of tests, part of our vocabulary? I mean,
you know, I
be.
Really think it should be. This should be, this should become with what is now published in the scientific and medical literature, this should, these kind of tests should become standard for anybody doing prenatal pregnancy work and or preconception work. It should be a standard test.
I
don't know why they're
you.
Not. I'm really hoping it will start to be.
Well,
and
you know, if you were aware
the cost
of any group,
is,
what?
I was going to say the cost of these tests is minuscule compared to the cost of the health bills that one will have for their child if they didn't do the test.
That's for sure. I mean, I have done work with some of the populations with ill children, and it's, you know, it's not only throughout the childhood, it can be throughout the adulthood even of the child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really can become lifelong. Now, I have a question for you. Are you aware of any groups that are working to, you know, kind of support this being part of some kind of aspect of healthcare, health insurance that could make it more widely available? Is there any one working on that front now? I haven't countered it myself, but I mean, I think it's an important initiative that should be worked on. Is there anyone doing that?
Not that I'm aware of. Now, Theo Coburn does have a new website,
mm-hmm.
TEDx. It's
mm-hmm.
Endocrine Disruption, and it's mm-hmm. like an interactive site that shows you exposure at various times along in the pregnancy to certain chemicals and what it causes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure of anyone who's really working on getting these tests to be more available.
Well, you know, maybe that goes back to, because at the beginning of the show, the action that I discussed for the week was taking action on the Endocrine Disruption Act that has been proposed for Congress, and TEDx and Theo Coburn are proponents of that. So maybe that is a good place to begin with further study and protection by the government and further study, and that really could also maybe wind up creating an opportunity for more testing. So I just want to refer listeners back to CatskillCitizens.org, where there's a link to that, and I'll also post one on my website. So, because I think that also has to begin. I mean, and I'm very, personally, I'm committed to, you know, kind of, we have this wisdom. There's maybe a lot of it that isn't really that easily treatable. But what is treatable, we should be treating. So I just want to, coming up to the end of the show, invite you to come back again, and thank you, Dr. Crinan. And refer our listeners to your book, which, you know, is a great resource for, as Dr. Crinan said, doing what you can do for yourself and your family, clean, green, and lean. And also Dr. Crinan's website is CrinanMedical.com. That's www. Crinan is spelled CRINNION medical.com. And you can learn more there as well. And also, please do take action at Catskill Citizens for the Endocrine Disruption Act. We very much would love to have you back with a special show just for, the new generation families who are planning to have children to put yourself in the best possible state. You know, even though our world has become more toxic, it makes it more important to do what you can, both to curb it for everyone and to address it for yourself and your family. So if you're willing to come, Dr. Crinan, we'd love to have you back.
I'd be happy to. It's a great topic. We really need to let people know about this.
All right. We'll be doing that soon. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on again. And listeners, I want to thank you for being with us here on Connect the Dots. We'll be back again, as we are every Saturday, live at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
And it was deep, it was night.